We're returning to our series in Ecclesiastes, and so if you want to turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 3, and if you grab one of the Bibles in the back, one of our Bibles, it's on page 573, if you're using one of those Bibles. But Ecclesiastes chapter 3, we're returning to study and see what truth, what significance we can take out of the book of Ecclesiastes, and not one that people go to very often, not one that we study regularly, but we want to make sure that we do that for this series. And so we're going to begin, when we get to it, we're going to be beginning in verse 16. We're not quite there yet, because so, I want to kind of bring you up to speed to the content and the truth that we have here in the book of Ecclesiastes. So the author, he calls himself the teacher. You'll see there a few times it talks about the teacher. That's the author of this book. Calls himself the teacher. He writes from the perspective of Solomon. And he calls his audience, those who are reading this book, and so the ones who originally he wrote to, but also those of us who are sitting here this morning who are reading it again, he calls us to listen to the truth, listen to the experience he's gained about life. And what he has concluded is that life without God, life without the belief in God or living as though God doesn't exist, life without God is meaningless. Some of your versions will use the word vanities. You see that over and over again, that it's meaningless. It's meaningless. Life without God, whether you don't believe in God or you live as though you don't believe in God, and so for all intents and purposes, you don't believe in God, that kind of life is meaningless. It's the vapor. We said this illustration. It's the vapor of your cold breath on a cold morning, right? If you were trying to grab it, you can't grab it, and pretty quickly it's gone. There's no substance to it. It's not really there. It looks like it's there, but it's not really there. So 2 weeks ago, the teacher developed the truth that life works in seasons. Every life moves through different seasons, and everything that happens in life happens in a season. And some seasons are good. Some seasons are bad. We don't get to pick the seasons. We just understand that life works in this cycle through these seasons. Some are long, some are short, but everything happens in life, and everything happens in seasons. And without God, remember this is his focus, without God, if you don't believe in God, if you don't live in respect of God or submission to God, if your life isn't a sacrifice of worship to God, then those seasons are meaningless. They're pointless. There's just one after another, and especially the bad ones, they're meaningless. There's no point to them. There's no significance in them, no substance in them. There's no way to really process through them because your life isn't a sacrifice to God. Your life isn't submitted to God. You're not navigating them with that submission to God. But for those that worship God, for those that do submit to God, that do view their lives as a sacrifice of worship to God, God has put beauty in every season. God has put beauty in every season, in all of them. He's inserted good gifts into each of those seasons for you to find and for you to use as a springboard into the worship of God. Even in the bad seasons, for those that submit to God, God has put good things, he put beautiful things into the season for us to find, as if you remember these little notes from our Heavenly Father that says, hey, remember me, remember this, and we look at those, we find those beautiful things, and we worship him in those seasons. It doesn't mean that the season is good. It doesn't mean that every season is good, and we look back and be like, man, that was a great season. What it means is there is something good in the season that God has put there for us to discover, put there for us to find and worship him because of it. And the fact that God is above the seasons, he's outside the seasons, superseding the seasons, over the seasons, he's planting good gifts into them for you as you navigate them, means that he has a plan, right? He has a plan. He's above them, and he has a plan of how all the seasons fit, good and bad, into your stained glass window of your life that he wants to reveal to you one day so you can see how they all fit together. And we can find security in that. For those that believe in God, for those that worship God, submit to God, and understand and respect God's plan, respect that he's above the seasons. He's not necessarily always causing the season, but he's putting good in the season. He wants us to navigate the season in worship to him. For those of us that believe in him, we can find security in that. We can find hope in that. Amid the changing seasons, that God is there. He's reminding us he's there, and he has a bigger, broader plan that we just can't see because we're too close. Remember, we're just seeing the paint drops. We're not seeing the picture. So here's the tension that we're going to get into when we get in our text this morning. And we touched on it a little bit 2 weeks ago. And the teacher's going to open it up about this, and he's going to be honest, and he's going to admit. So here's where I struggle. This is the teacher. This is maybe where you struggle too. Here's where I struggled with this seasons of life thing. Because it's nice. Okay, so we could talk about that. We can hear it, and the teacher gets that life works in seasons, and some seasons hurt, right? Some seasons even hurt bad. But here's where he struggles, and maybe you do too. Some of our seasons in life hurt really bad because of other people's actions or influence, not because it's a natural season, not because sometimes you just get sick. Or because, you know, the economy has its ways of going up and down. It's not a natural occurrence in life. Sometimes the seasons hurt really bad because of other people and their actions and their influence. And saying that that is just a season makes it feel like it's just part of the course of life. And it is what it is, right? And well, it happens. And it doesn't communicate or even touch the deep pain that people can cause each other. The hurt that people can inflict on each other. And it doesn't, just saying, well, it's just a season, doesn't reflect or address the injustice of it. How can someone else hurt me this bad? I get that sickness might hurt me bad. I get that those kind of events can cause grief and unexpected grief. But why do other people get to hurt me this bad? And it's these seasons of man-made grief, this deep, unnecessary, senseless pain. But just calling it a season doesn't seem to quite address. And people can cause each other deep hurt, and it results in grief and frustration or anger. And when a season of hurt is specifically caused by someone else, there is a deep sense of injustice, right? Because we often have nothing to do, done nothing to deserve the pain, nothing to deserve the grief is there. And again, calling it a season doesn't explain it, doesn't help, it doesn't give the answer to why someone can cause that grief on somebody else. And yes, there is good. There's good that God has inserted for us to find and to be reminded that he loves us, but that doesn't even change the tension of why do other people get to cause seasons of grief on other people? And so maybe you've been there. In fact, you have been there. Not maybe, you've been there in one way or another. Someone dealt you a season of grief, a season of hurt, and you were left wondering, how do I process this? How do I deal with this? Maybe you are even today. You're still trying to deal with, why? Why does this get to happen? Why do we get these seasons of grief from other people? Or maybe you've observed it in people close to you, and you're struggling to process why that had to happen to them at the hands of somebody else. And maybe you've seen the news, but you know, last Thursday, 7-year-old Antonio Yarger was walking with friends outside his home on the east side of Erie when someone fired 3 gunshots, and whether intentional or not, one of those gunshots hit Antonio in the head and grievously wounded him, and Monday morning, Antonio died. He's 7 years old. Why do people get to do that to each other? And how do you process it? That's not just a season, right? That's not just the natural course of events. Like this was at the hands of somebody else who didn't have to do that. And so calling that a tragedy, calling that just a season for his family, or just a part of the course of life, it feels trite, it feels insufficient. Right, that was man-made, unnecessary pain, unnecessary grief, unnecessary loss and hurt, or watching the news reports and the stories coming out of the Ukraine is heartbreaking. And yes, there are seasons of war in life where nations do things, but it's unnecessary. A lot of it is so senseless, and men just leave a trail of pain and hurt and grief and broken lives in their wake. And some of you have been broken and hurt by other people's actions and influence, and we're left with the struggle, what to do with it? What do we do with this? And in the natural course of life, sure, there's a season for everything, but when men cause a season of grief and pain on other people, what do we do with that? How do we process that? And this is where the teacher is saying, honestly, here's where I struggle. I struggle with the season thing because not every season is natural, right? Even knowing there's a season for everything, he still struggles with this. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, we're going to look at verse 16 first. Ecclesiastes 3, verse 16. So I saw something else under the sun. In the place of judgment, wickedness was there. In the place of justice, wickedness was there. So he's just got through that whole thing, like, here's the seasons, here's the seasons, here's the seasons, there's a season for everything. God inserts good in the season, right? Just we're meant to fear God and worship him. But also, I struggle with this because here's what I see. There's wickedness. There's these seasons where men are wicked and hurt each other. Godless people hurt each other, and it's just wicked. And from the teacher's perspective, where there should be fairness, where there should be justice, where there should be sound judgment between people, there's only wickedness. People don't use sound judgment with each other. They aren't fair with each other. They aren't good to each other. People without God are selfish. People without God are abusive. They're manipulative. They're haters of each other. And where there should be, he says, in the place of justice, where there should be objective morality, where there should be righteousness, where there should be ethics, where there should be rightness. People should be right with each other. There's only wickedness. People without God are immoral, right? They're unethical. They're dishonest. And they're just wrong. And he's right. Sinful people do sinful things. Sinful people do sinful things to each other all the time. He's right. People without God hurt each other. People without God are selfish, abusive, and cruel. They're wicked, and their wickedness hurts other people. It's unjust. It lacks judgment. It lacks fairness. It's unrighteous and without morality. But it is. It happens. It happens. And it hurts people. And later, the teacher is going to reflect on this further in chapter 4, actually. He's going to reflect on this and kind of go a little bit deeper with where his thoughts, where his struggle is. In chapter 4 of Ecclesiastes, verse 1, he says, "Again, I looked and saw all the oppression that was taking place under the sun," meaning sinful people doing sinful things to other people. "I saw the tears of the oppressed, and without God, they have no comforter. Power was on the side of their oppressors, and they have no comforter. And I declared that the dead who had already died are happier than the living who are still alive, because," go back to verse 1, "sinful people do sinful things to each other. And so the dead are happier than the people who have to live through wicked people doing wicked things to each other." Verse 3, "But better than both is the one who has never been born, who has not seen the evil that is done under the sun." This is his struggle. I get their seasons, but this, for some, maybe it's just better not to even be born, to have to deal with the sinful things that sinful people do to each other. And in this raw moment, the teacher says, "When I observe the way that people hurt each other, the wickedness of men without God towards each other, the uncomforted tears they cause, my gut says the dead are happier because they don't have to deal with wicked men anymore. In fact, it's better to not even be born." Have you ever had those thoughts? I've thought that. And maybe you've wondered too, like, some people have had those thoughts. What is the point of bringing a child into this world when they're just going to be sinned against by sinful people, and they're going to be hurt, and there's going to be grief and pain and frustration? So he's expressing here the depths, the struggle that he's having with this. And the question is, what do we do with the fact, because it happens, that sinful people do sinful things and they cause seasons of hurt, deep hurt to others, to us? So the first thing that needs to be said is that men hurt each other because of sin. Been saying that, but men hurt each other because of sin. People hurt each other because of sin. Sinful people do sinful things. In fact, all the hurt, all the pain, all the decay, all the death, all the grief, all the evil that we experience is caused by sin. It's not caused by God. It's caused by sin. God created everything good without sin, including men. But he also created men with the ability to choose. And his expectation was that men would choose good, choose to honor God's design, but it was theirs to choose. And Adam and Eve chose the knowledge of good and evil. And now, generations after that choice, and choices after that, corrupted by sin, it is very hard for sinful people to not choose evil. It's very hard to choose the good because of sin. But that's not God. That's you. That's men, corrupted by sin. And the underlying issue here is sin and people who don't believe in God and his son, people who don't live like they believe in God and instead live like they are slaves to sin. They choose evil. Sinful people do sinful things. It's not an answer. It's an explanation. Sinful people do sinful things. And so Paul, when he's talking to Titus, he tells Titus that God has to teach those who believe, you, me, those who believe in him, he has to teach them to stop choosing evil because sinful people do sinful things. We choose evil. It's very hard for a sinful person to choose good. And so God has to teach them to stop choosing evil, and that requires redeeming them from wickedness, first paying the price. And so he tells Titus in Titus chapter 2, verse 12, that the grace of God teaches us to say no to ungodliness and worldly passion. No, I'm not going to choose sin and evil. Teaches us to live self-controlled, upright, and godly lives in this present age. People choose evil because they haven't learned to say no because they're still wicked. They haven't had their sin addressed with. Verse 14 of Titus chapter 2. So he explains this wickedness, that Jesus gave himself for us to redeem us from all wickedness, and to purify for himself a people that are his very own. Those people are eager to do good because we've been taught, we've been cleansed of that wickedness, and we've been taught how to choose, how to say no to ungodliness, how to say no to those worldly passions, and instead live controlled, upright, and godly lives. And so Jesus gave himself for people so they could learn to stop choosing evil and be eager instead to do what is good. Sinful people do sinful things. And Paul explains the wickedness that is in us in chapter 3, verse 3 of Titus. He says, at one time, you had to learn to stop doing this because we too, like sinful people, were foolish, we're disobedient, deceived, and we were enslaved by all kinds of passions and pleasures. And we lived in malice and envy, being hated and hating one another. Why? Because sinful people do sinful things. And God has to teach us first by redeeming us from that wickedness through our belief in Jesus, and then teach us to stop choosing evil. And this wickedness, again, is a result of sin and men's choice. It's not a result of God. It's not from God. It's from men's choice and sin. So the teacher then illustrates, so he's struggling with this, and you have to understand, I wanted you to see, it's important to know that that wickedness comes from you in sin. It doesn't come from God, it comes from you in sin, but we learn to say no to that wickedness when we begin to have a genuine belief in God, a saving belief in Jesus, his son, and his death for us on the cross. So the teacher, struggling with this, doesn't know about Jesus' death yet, but so he's struggling with this, and he illustrates the effects of and the nature of men's wickedness in a rather unusual way. If you look at verse 18, the teacher explains wickedness, saying that people without God are animals. They're animals. Verse 18. So I said to myself, as for humans, God tests them so that they may see that they are like the animals. Surely the fate of human beings is like that of the animals. The same fate awaits them both. As one dies, so dies the other. All have the same breath. Humans have no advantage over animals. Everything is meaningless. All go to the same place. All come from the dust, and to dust all return. So let me explain a couple things here, because it sounds like he's trying to tell us, it sounds like the Bible is trying to tell us that there's no difference between men and animals. That's not what's happening here, so let me explain. So first, when he says in verse 18 that God tests humans, right, God tests them so they may see that they're like the animals in verse 18. What he means is that God allows people to choose evil, to choose sin, and choose wickedness. And he gave Adam and Eve that choice, and he could have stopped them. God could have stopped Adam and Eve from choosing. He could have stopped them from making those choices, but he allowed it because being human is to have a choice. And so being human is to have a choice, but because of sin, people choose evil all the time. And so the teacher says, men without God don't choose anything but evil. They're just like an animal. And God lets men have that choice, even though they're going to choose, because of sin, evil every time. They're going to choose sinfulness because sinful people do sinful things. God does that because it's a test. So let me explain. From a human example, it would be like us watching two kids about to do something incredibly dumb. We're watching out the window and we see them doing incredibly dumb. Could you open the window and yell out and say, stop, before something happens? You could. But there's something inside us sometimes that says, you know what? Let's just wait and see here. Let's see what happens. When a year or two ago, my sons found this really old climbing rope in our garage. And I mean really old. It had been chewed on by like squirrels. Like it was pretty frayed and stuff. And I didn't know that it was in there. It was in the back of the garage. And so they decided they were going to turn it into a climbing rope. And they were like looping it around the tree branches and like trying to get it to where it was really firm and attached. And then they were standing on a bench that we have and they were going to swing. They were going to swing from this rope that a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old had attached to a tree. And I'm watching that, first of all, thinking they're not that high. So, well, let's see what happens. Turns out they actually somehow attached it very securely and nothing happened. And I was the one that was wrong because I thought they were gonna get hurt and it was going to fall. And so from a human example, it's like seeing two people, two kids, you're watching them and you're thinking, I could open the window and tell them to stop. But let's see what happens. And the reason you usually say that is because people have to learn. They have to learn from their mistakes. God is doing the same thing with men who choose evil. The idea is that at some point, maybe you'll stop and think the consequences of the choices that we're making are just too great. And it's not God saying, let's see what happens because he's not sure what's going to happen. He knows what's going to happen. Men are the ones that don't know what's going to happen, and they need to learn. They need to figure out and have that test given to them so they can be evaluated. They can evaluate themselves. So God knows what's going to happen. And he's actually saying, according to the teacher, let's let humans see what happens with their choices and if they learn anything from it. The problem is they don't. They act like animals. They just choose the same thing, the same evil over and over and over again. Allowing the choices and the results of sin and wickedness is an evaluation of humanity for humanity, not for God. He knows what will happen. He knows what will happen when humans choose evil, but humans have to learn from themselves. So God allows people to choose evil for the purpose of their own evaluation to see their score. And the teacher says what humans are supposed to see of themselves is that they are like animals, specifically without God, without a genuine life-changing belief in God. People are no better than animals. They're no better than beasts. And if they pause to observe, to actually evaluate the test, that would be apparent. Look at that man who shot that boy. He is no better than an animal. It is wicked. There was no good there. He didn't choose the good. Look at what's happening in Ukraine or in other parts of the world, in Africa, in Myanmar, and all these other countries where men are treating each other horribly. They are animals. And some of us can see it, and we realize that there is a choice between good and evil, and many men make the choice for evil because sinful people do sinful things, and it should be apparent. Now, the teacher jumps to the very last similarity between humans and animals, death, right? That's where he goes. He goes to verse 19. He says, surely the fate of them both is death. It's the same. He jumps to death, but I don't want to lose this thought yet, that men without a belief in God are like animals. A genuine belief in God motivates a person's submission and their worship. And humans are no different than beasts, no different than operating based on selfishness, self-preservation, greed, instinct, desire, pleasure. The thing that Paul told Titus, right? We operate on malice and envy, hating, being hated and hating one another, right? Without concern with each other, without a genuine belief in God. That's how people operate. Does that sound about right? When you see people who don't have a genuine belief in God, do they not operate based on selfishness, self-preservation, greed, instinct, right? Desire, pleasure, without a concern for other people? As a whole, yes. That individual that shot Antonio last Thursday was not motivated by submission and worship of God. Couldn't have been. And if he was, he would not have come close to pulling that trigger. He was operating on an animalistic level, motivated by wickedness. He had a choice, and he chose sin. He chose evil. The people that hurt each other, the people that hurt you, are not motivated by a genuine belief in God. They're motivated by sin. They're motivated by selfishness. They're motivated by base desires, which is, in truth, the teacher says, no different than an animal. And this is meaningless because God isn't in it, he says. In verse 19, everything is meaningless when men are motivated just like an animal, without a belief in God. Now, the teacher isn't arguing for an evolutionary mindset of some sort of equality between men and animals. That's not what he's saying. He's saying men without God act like an animal. They should choose something different, but they don't every time. Right? The animals and humans are not the same. They're not equal in God's creation. That's not what he's teaching. His point is people without God aren't better than animals in the way that they live, in the way that they approach life, and specifically how they treat each other. It's the same. And ultimately, he says, the last similarity is they both die. They both die. And he says this because he wants to lead us back to processing the problem of evil. What do we do when people do sinful things and they hurt us, and they hurt us badly? How do we process the problem of evil between people? The fact that people do wicked things to each other and cause that deep man-made grief. Verse 21. Now I'm reading from the NIV, and that's important for a moment. But who knows if the human spirit rises upward and if the spirit of the animal goes down into the earth? So I saw that there is nothing better for a person than to enjoy their work, because that is their lot. For who can bring them to see what will happen after them? So he brings us back to the fact that animals and humans both die. They both die. Because he wants to bring us back to how do we process this man-made grief. So first thing he says is, who knows, the human spirit rises upward and the spirit of the animal goes down into the earth. Now the NIV, when it translates, the editors of that version, the version in verse 21, add the word if. Who knows if? Who knows if the human spirit rises upwards and if the spirit of the animal goes down into the earth? It's not a good addition. And if you have an NIV, if you want my suggestion, you cross out the word if. This is not a question in that he's wondering the answer. That's not what this is in verse 21. He's using this in an accusatory way of people who don't believe in God. Who knows? Does anybody know? Does anybody realize that the human spirit rises upward and the spirit of an animal goes down to the earth? It's not an if. This isn't I'm wondering. Does anybody know? This is a, does anybody out there know that the human spirit goes up and the animals doesn't? Right? They both die, and that's true, but there is a difference. There is a difference, and it's in verse 21 that he's saying it, and he's asking of anybody out there, do they realize this? Do they realize that the human spirit goes up and the animal spirit goes down, or the animal just goes into the earth? And the answer is no one knows. None of them know. None of these people who act like animals, none of these people who do sinful people who do sinful things, they don't realize. They think everybody just dies, but what they don't realize is that's not true. Unlike the animals, their spirit goes up. That's what he's pointing at. He's not wondering for his own sake. His point is that people without God who are hurting each other and acting wickedly towards each other and causing unnecessary and senseless pain and grief on each other, what they don't realize is they aren't just like the animals. They don't just die in the end. They don't realize the spirit of the human goes upward, that they have an eternal destiny. They have an eternal destination. There is more beyond the grave, is what he's pointing out. Animals aren't humans. Animals go down into the earth, which is a euphemism there in Hebrew for ceasing in effect. Animals, when they die, just stop. They're done. But a human who dies continues on. They aren't like the animals in death. It looks like it. Animals and humans both die. And from a perspective without God, that seems like it's the end, but it's not. A human who dies continues on. But the godless people of the world who are all sinful, all choosing degrees of wickedness, don't appreciate or understand the gravity of or the truth that there is more after death for everyone. They think that this life is all there is, so they just go about what they're about, because that's all a person without God has. That's all that they have. So that's why he says in verse 22, I saw that people living without God think that death is the end. And so though in that sense, there's nothing better for a person than to enjoy their work, because that is their lot. Just do what they do. Go be what you're about. If your work is to be evil with other people, they're being evil with other people, because in their mind, death is the end. There's nothing after that. And it's not true. None of them know. None of them realize that the animal ceases in effect, but the human continues on after death. And the key, the answer is that last sentence in verse 22, who can bring them to see what will happen after them? That's the answer. Bring them to see what will happen after them. See, if humans are just like animals and eventually everyone dies, then wickedness doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I'll just do what I want. We're all going to die anyway. People just hurt each other and there's no answer for why. And there's no hope for why. What do I do if somebody hurt me? We're all just going to die. I don't know. It's just a season. And those seasons then are the deepest, darkest seasons you can go through without an answer, without any sliver of light or hope. But the teacher says the key to all this is bringing people to see what will happen after them. Bring them to see, verse 22, what will happen after them. It's recognizing that the human spirit continues on after death, and there is more than just this life. That is the key and the answer to how to process this. So, why? Why is this the key? Why is this the key to processing and dealing with the seasons of hurt that people inflict on each other, even the most wicked people inflict on each other? The reason it's the key is because God exists. Without God, everything is meaningless. Without God, it just hurts. But God exists. God exists above the seasons. And the human spirit rises to him after death. That doesn't mean everybody goes to heaven. It means everybody has to come face to face with God after death. Every spirit rises to him and stands before him after death. Because God exists, it means everything. And you have to bring people to see, those who have been hurt have to see that death isn't the end, that there is more that happens after death, even for the wicked. And so this makes all the difference for a person who genuinely believes in God and submits to and worships him through his son. Look back at verse 17. We skipped it, and we skipped it for a reason, because he gives us the conclusion before he gets to the problem. Look at verse 17 of chapter 3. So the problem, instead of judgment, there's wickedness. Instead of justice, there's wickedness. So I said to myself, verse 17, God will bring into judgment both the righteous and the wicked, for there will be a time, there's that season, for every activity, a time to judge every deed. And the teacher says, so how do I process the human inflicted wicked seasons of pain and hurt that are caused to other people, that are caused on me? If there is a season for everything, then there is also a season for judgment. If there is a season for everything, then there is also a season for judgment. There will be a time to judge the righteous and the wicked. There will be a season for judgment. The people who cause hurt and pain, who are motivated by sin and evil, there is a time they will be judged. That season is right after their death. Unlike the animals, the wicked, the evil, the abusers, the perpetrators of violence, they don't get to escape through their death. They don't get to simply cease to exist after death and not be held accountable for all their wickedness and all their evil, the sinful things that people did to other people. Their spirit goes up to God, and God is the just and righteous judge. Evil is a result of human choice, and it seems, when we see it, it seems that it's unrestrained. But God knows the resolution will come. They're not getting away with this. They're not getting away with it. And death is not an escape. Death is not their getaway. A man who shot Antonio seems like he's gotten away with it right now. He did not. And there will be judgment, and he will be repaid. It seems unrestrained, but God knows that the resolution will come. The time to judge the godless who lived, hated, and hating one another will come. And so our seasons of human-inflicted pain exist because to be human is to have a choice between the worship of God or sin, and too many choose evil. They choose sin. But one day God will avenge. He is taking account, and he will judge and repay individuals for every wicked and evil deed that they committed in their life. Look at what Paul says to the Roman believers about this. In Romans chapter 2, Paul says, because of your stubbornness and your unrepentant heart, so sinful people doing sinful things, you are storing up wrath against yourself for the day of God's wrath, when his righteous judgment will be revealed. God will repay each person according to what they have done. For those who are self-seeking and who reject the truth and follow evil, there will be wrath and anger. There will be trouble and distress for every human being who does evil. That person who hurt you, they have an account to pay. They have stored up wrath for themselves. They're storing up wrath. They have an account with God, and they're filling it up. And the evil, the wicked, the ones who hurt each other and choose evil, they are on a collision course with God's righteous anger and judgment. And death is not an escape. It is a gateway. Asaph, the psalmist, one of the psalmists, he struggles in the same way the teacher did. And he identifies his frustration that the wicked seem to prosper while hurting and inflicting pain. And it seems that that no one is concerned about it. This is Asaph's struggle. He sees wicked prospering, but they're on the way to prosperity. They're hurting people. They're inflicting pain on people, and it seems that maybe God seems unconcerned. They don't care, right? And they enjoy the fact that God appears unaffected. Seems like he's not doing anything, and he's allowing their wickedness. They think they're getting away with it. And he admits in Psalm chapter 73, verse 16, Asaph says, "When I tried to understand how it is that the wicked get to do this and that nothing is being done, it troubled me deeply. Why do sinful people get to do sinful things and get away with it?" But then Asaph shares what helped calm his troubled mind in verse 17 of Psalm 73. "So I went before God. I brought this to God. I entered the sanctuary of God. I put myself in front of God in submission to God. And then I understood their final destiny. Surely you place them on slippery ground. You cast them down to ruin. How suddenly they are destroyed, completely swept away by terrors. They are like a dream when one awakes. When you arise, Lord, you will despise them." It's fantasy. "When God stands in judgment over the wicked, their punishment will be swift and devastating. And for the rest of us, for those who have a genuine belief in God, their lives, the seasons of hurt that they cause, will be like a dream, and it's over." And this, for the teacher, for Paul, for Asaph, is how we can deal with the deep hurt that sinful people cause each other. God is not ignoring it. God is not ignoring the hurt that was caused you. He has not forgotten it. He has written it down, and he has put a date on the day he will repay it. He is not unconcerned by it. He's taking notes and he's keeping a record, and it is allowed because to be human is to choose. You have chosen good. You have chosen righteousness. You have chosen belief, but everybody else has to make their choice too, and they're making the choice for wickedness. To be human is to choose, and that means humans hurt each other. Sinful people do sinful things to each other, and sin messed up the choices, and those choices make sinful people hurt each other badly, but God is not indifferent to it. He is not indifferent to your pain. He is not uncaring about your hurt and your grief. He's not unjust. In fact, he makes this chilling statement, and if you have been hurt, this statement is for you. In Romans chapter 12, Paul tells people, don't take revenge. Don't be the one that causes wickedness to someone else. Sinful people shouldn't do sinful things. Good people shouldn't do sinful things to each other because of sinful people. Leave room for God's wrath, for it is written, and this is yours to claim. "It is mine to avenge. I will repay, says the Lord." And if the wicked and the evil could read that statement with a belief in God, it would chill them to the bone. And for those who have been hurt by wicked people, that is not just a hope, it is your promise. The wicked will face the judge, and they will face the full force of his wrath, and they will not get away with any of it. Nothing escaped God's notice. He wrote it all down. And remember, God's heart is with the oppressed. And for those who have a true belief in God, demonstrated by their submission to him and their worship of him, he will reward their patience. He will reward their trust. Without God, or if you don't worship God and haven't found your salvation from sin through Jesus, your hurt and your suffering is meaningless. The hurt that other people caused you, there's no hope. If you don't believe in God, if you don't have a saving faith in Jesus, but if you believe in God with that saving faith in Jesus, then this promise is yours. Those people who hurt you are not going to escape through death. They will receive their payment. They will receive their judgment from a just, loving God who loves you and will honor his promise to you. Without a belief in God, and if your hope is in this life, then the hurt is all there is. But if your trust is in God, truly in God, and if your hope is in an eternal life apart from sin, then ultimately the answer to grief and the answer to hurt at the hands of others is hope in God. Hope in God. He is the avenger. Hope in God. He is the restorer. Hope in God. He is the righteous judge. And you are promised to see justice. And sometimes it doesn't ease the pain, but that hope is all you have. That God saw and will judge. But if you believe in him, that's all you need. Hope in God, because he will repay. Will you pray with me? God, we do trust you, and we hope in you. And I just want to pray right now specifically for those who are sitting here and hearing this, and they're thinking of a very specific pain in their life, one they're going through right now, one that they just went through and are still trying to process, this the grief that goes deep, and they believe in you and they trust you. God, will you overwhelm them this morning with a sense of relief that they can hope in you and they can trust you to repay, that they can count on you, that it seems like that you weren't there, that you weren't watching, you weren't observing, but you were, and you have taken account and you have a list, and you will honor them and their belief in you by repaying the evil and the wickedness done to them, the hurt caused to them, the grief brought on them. Will you overwhelm those grieving this morning, those hurting this morning, with an unwavering hope in you, that their God is waiting for them with open arms, will grasp them and place them behind him as he looks at their accusers, as he looks at their persecutors and the perpetrators and the manipulators and the abusers and all of those people who have caused grief, and he will turn the tables on them and give them the justice that we are hoping for, the judgment that they need. Bring us that comfort this morning. Help us to make sure that we have a genuine belief in God that makes everything that happens in life not meaningless, that there is hope for us after death. And God, I want to pray too, because it's only fair and it's only right, for those that hurt, for those that cause grief, will you bring them repentant? Will you help them to see the wickedness and the evil of their choices, the sin that causes them to do it? Bring them to their knees to beg for your forgiveness and find salvation in your Son. And if there's anyone in here this morning that's experiencing hurt or realizing that they don't have that salvation in you, and so they aren't sure that you are going to be their fair, just judge, we help them to see that they need to turn their lives and ask for their own forgiveness to you. I love you, God, and I trust you as our judge and our defender. And I pray this in your name. Amen.